Back here as we approach 7:42, it is time for our Greenside Up program, brought to you by the folks at Green Acres. And joining us, we have a David Rowling in studio, diversified ag agent. How are you doing, David?
Good morning. I'm doing well, thank you. How are you?
Hey, not doing too bad. So I know it's been already an interesting spring here, as we've already had our first tornado warnings of the year, and it's all happening.
Yeah, it seems like spring is getting an early start this year.
Which, well, the groundhog said we would.
That is true. I had kind of forgotten about that. But with the warmer weather, and I know I'm excited about spring and being able to do more work outside with the longer days now. But one downside to it warming up early and the rain we've been having, which is awesome that we're getting rain, I'll definitely take that. But those warmer days and that moisture makes for the perfect combination for parasites to take off. And of course, I talk about this every year in relation to sheep and goats and coming up with a management plan for spring and summer. But with these warmer temperatures, parasites can get a head start. We might start to see problems with them earlier than we have in years past. And also the last couple of years with the drought, the pastures have taken a hard hit. I know mine have. So in some cases, we're dealing with less grass in our pastures or shorter grass in our pastures. And when that grass is shorter and sheep and goats graze it, they're eating closer to the soil, which is where the parasites live, at the very end, or you could say base of that grass stem. So it's more likely for there to be more parasite problems. So one way that you can kind of help reduce the parasite problems is get an early start on recognizing the signs to treat animals that have that heavier parasite load and need to be treated. So with sheep and goats, there's a big struggle with dealing with parasite resistance because there's not as many dewormers on the market that are approved for especially goats, but sheep as well, as compared to cattle. So parasites are becoming resistant to some of these dewormers. So to help slow down this resistance, it's recommended that you only treat the animals in your herd that need to be treated, instead of just going out and doing that blanket treatment once a month or a couple times a year, like what used to be recommended. So I do recommend every month you like working all those animals if possible and checking to see which ones need to be treated for parasites. So that can be determined by looking at their body condition score. So if you have a doe that is skinnier than the rest of the herd and she doesn't show any other health signs, in combination with maybe she has a rough hair coat, she's shed it out for spring, but her coat isn't nice and shiny like the other ones in the herd. And also looking at the inner eyelid color, that's a really good indicator for barber pole worms, which is one of the most common parasites that we have problems with in sheep and goats. And if the color of that inner eyelid is pale pink to white, then they definitely need to be treated. And we kind of use that rule of thumb, you know, if they have barber pole worms, chances are very high that they have other types of parasites as well. So you can go ahead and treat them for barber pole worms and those other types of parasites. And kind of tying into that, there's different classes of dewormers, and these different classes have different main ingredients. So there's the white dewormers that are commonly known as Safeguard and Valvazin are two common ones, and then you have those clear dewormers like Cydectin, Ivermectin, and then there's the other class, which is either Prohibit or Levosol. So it's recommended to use a combination of those three. And it doesn't mean like, you know, mixing them all together and making your own concoction. It just means treating the animal with all three of them at the same time. So you'll still dose them separately because they have different dosages. But you'll just, they're all orally. So you'll just give them one after another, which, you know, doesn't really make you popular with the goat herd. Mm-hmm. But it is what they've found to currently be the most successful at treating parasites.
And how are these? Are these kind of coming in like a paste? Yeah, like how do you actually administer these?
Yeah, so these are a liquid solution. So they're thinner than a paste. You know, we call them a drench solution, so it's more kind of like, some of them are thicker. The white dewormers are probably about the thickness of like milk, for example, as like a comparison. So they come in a bottle, and then you have a drench gun, which is like a really big syringe, or you can also use a big syringe. And you draw them out of the bottle, and then you put the tip of that drench gun in the animal's mouth. And usually you go through the side of the mouth and point it back, so you're kind of in the corner of their mouth, because you're trying to get them to swallow it instead of spitting it out at you, which sometimes happens. Now, the Prohibit and the Levosol dewormers, they do come in a package. They're a powder. And then you mix them with water to create the drench solution.
Gotcha. And then I assume the dose is, you can kind of set that in the gun pretty easily.
Yeah. So there's a couple different styles of drench guns. Some, yes, you set the dose in the drench gun. Others that are more of the, just like the traditional syringe style, you just fill it to the amount that you need. And that dosage is based on the body weight of the animal. And I know not everyone has scales in their pasture where they can weigh the animals as they're working them. But they do make weight tapes for goats that they're not 100% accurate, but they do get you pretty close to the rough weight of that animal that you can use to calculate the dosage.
Gotcha. So no, that's good. Now, if you have an animal, obviously it's exhibiting signs of, you know, parasites. You give it one dose. Do you have to follow up with another dose after that? What's the usual rule of thumb?
Usually, the rule of thumb is if they're showing signs of parasites, but they're not severe signs or symptoms, then you just dose them and you check them again the next month. If they're showing more severe signs of having parasites, so their inner eyelid color is almost white, they have diarrhea or bottle jaw, or they've lost a lot of weight, then you treat them for parasites. And then I like to go back in a week to 2 weeks and treat them again to try and knock out all the life stages yep. of the parasites.
Good deal. So anything else that we should know on all of this?
The other one I wanted to touch on, which is more related to kids, is also coccidiosis. So that coccidia is another type of parasite that lives in the ground. And this one gets into the intestinal lining of animals and can do a lot of harm. And it mostly affects younger kids about a month to 6 months old. And for that type of parasite, you actually can feed medicated feed that will help prevent coccidiosis, or you can put a solution in their drinking water to help prevent it, because in that case prevention works better than trying to cure it, because once it hits an animal it usually comes on pretty fast. And if a kid has a severe case of coccidiosis, it can damage their intestinal lining, and then they won't grow as well. They always kind of tend to be a poor doer.
Gotcha. Well, very good. Well, now as far as, you know, other topics here in spring, are we kind of through kitting and lambing for the most part? Is that still going on in some areas?
It's still going on in some areas. So I know some folks are already done with kitting and lambing if they went, you know, in December or earlier in the year. Some people are in the middle of it and other folks are just getting started.
Yeah. Be a long road ahead for some folks.
Yeah. Yep.
Well, good deal. Well, anything else you want to share while we have some time with you at Davin?
Yeah. So this weekend on Saturday is the Makers Fair in Parsons at the Southeast Research and Extension Center. They're on the corner of Highway 400 and Ness Road, and this will be a combination. K-State Extension will have different demonstrations going on throughout the day of tomato grafting, mushrooms in a bag, cooking demonstrations. 4-H kids will have their projects on exhibit, and then there also will be different vendors there. And it will be pretty cool because these vendors make everything themselves, and they'll kind of show their product that they make in different stages, or maybe how they make part of the project. And there will also be some food trucks there as well. And I know Aunt Julie's Donuts is one of those food trucks. So if you're looking for something to do on Saturday, come check it out.
Hey, that's very good. So we appreciate the update there. So lots of stuff going on within the Wildcat District. And Davin, if people do have questions for you on you know, this topic you talked about today, or any diversified ag topic, I know you can answer questions on chickens and all that sort of thing too. What's the best way to get a hold of you?
They can reach me by calling our independence office. That number is 620-331-2690.
Okay, well, appreciate that, Davin, and we're going to have more on the other side of the news here from K-State Research and Extension's Wildcat District. So keep it here on the mighty 690, 51 degrees right now at 7:54, and more news on the way. Back here on the mighty 690 at 8:11, it is time for our Greens Hit Up program continuing, and joining us, we have Diversified Ag Asia and Davin Rowling. Good morning once again, Davin.
Good morning.
So, before we start off here, I know you've got another topic for us, but I wanted to bring the folks up to speed on a few of the events that are coming up for the area, if you want to talk about those.
Yeah, this Saturday we have the Makers Fair in Parsons. It will be at the K-State Southeast Research and Extension Center, right there on the corner of Highway 400 and Ness Road. This will be a really cool event if you're looking for something to do on Saturday. It will be a combination of demonstrations by K-State Extension on different topics, everything from cooking, growing mushrooms in a bag, tomato grafting. 4-H'ers will have their projects there on the display as well. And there will also be vendors there, and these vendors will be selling products that they make themselves, and will be showing a little bit about how they make their products too. And in addition to these demonstrations and vendors, there will also be a couple of food trucks there. Aunt Julie's Donuts will be there, and there will also be a kettle corn truck there as well. So a really great opportunity to get out and about on Saturday and get some snacks as well. And then the other program we have coming up is our homesteading series. This series kicked off last week. It will be Thursday evenings at 6 p.m. is when the classes begin. Classes last an hour to 2 hours depending on the specific class, and these will be hosted at different locations throughout the district. So last week Jesse started off the series with a fruit tree pest management class. Tomorrow Wendy will be doing one on small scale livestock operations, multi-species livestock operations and grazing plans. And then other subjects that we'll be covering throughout the series are raising goats, backyard chickens, canning, soap making, mushrooms in a bag, fermentation, and good grazing practices. And these will be held every Thursday evening through the beginning of May. So for more information on this series, you can visit our website, wildcatdistrict.ksu.edu/homesteadingseries, or give us our office a call at 620-331-2690.
Excellent. So some good opportunities there for you as we approach spring. Not officially yet, but hey, another thing that folks are going to be thinking about this time of year is pests and all that sort of thing.
Yes.
And we can't forget the great American mole, right?
Right. Yeah. So kind of every spring I get a few questions about moles causing damage in people's yards, along with armadillos, because as it gets warmer out, then we see a lot of activity from wildlife and pests as well. So moles are usually a concern for homeowners because they make their tunnels, in the lawn. And while you hardly ever see the mole itself, you will see that tunnel. And that tunnel will be, kind of just look like a trail of dirt through your lawn where the grass used to be. The grass is no longer there. And the moles actually don't eat on the plant material itself, but they can still cause damage to a lawn, for example, by disturbing the roots of the grass as they dig their tunnels. So this is what they're known for, is making these travel lanes, and usually it's kind of a meandering path, not one straight line of upheaved soil. So some tunnels they'll abandon shortly after they dig them, because these were just kind of used as a travel lane. They checked out one area, didn't really find any food they liked there, or found all the food that was to be had there, and then moved along. So if you see these tunnels in your yard and you're wanting to get rid of the mole problem, first you're going to want to figure out which tunnels the moles are still using. So to do this, you can take a rake or a shovel and take the handle of that rake or shovel and stick it down and make a hole in their tunnel, kind of collapse that dirt, and then go out the next day and see if that tunnel has been fixed or not. And if it has been fixed, that means that they're still using it, and that would be a good tunnel to place a trap in. And some people, have tried baits. I get a lot of questions about, is there baits? Is there deterrents? And poison baits fail to work on moles because they feed on earthworms and grubs, not vegetable matter or plant matter that those baits are usually on. And even grub control products that you can treat your lawn with aren't very effective because they don't control earthworms. And of course, we want the earthworms in our yard. They're good to have around. So because moles are kind of tricky to catch, you can place a trap in an active run by scooping out a little bit of soil and placing the trap, and then replacing the loose soil around the trap. And of course, secure the trap so that the recoil will not lift the trap out of the ground, and make sure the triggering mechanism is not in the center of the run. So these traps, they're kind of hard to explain how to set up and use over the air on the radio like this morning, but Drew Ricketts, our wildlife specialist with K-State, he recently put out a very good YouTube video on how to set these traps to catch the moles that are disturbing your yard. So if you would like, to see how to go about setting these traps, that link to that video can be found on the Facebook page. You can also call our office and I can send you a link to that video that will kind of walk you through step by step how to set the trap in that tunnel and hopefully get rid of the mole problem.
Oh, gotcha. Now, you know, we see pictures of moles, you know, star-nosed moles, that sort of thing. Can they actually see at all, or are they blind, or like, what is, do you know on that?
They have very, very poor eyesight. And a characteristic of moles is that their front feet are webbed. They look kind of similar to duck feet, but they use those front feet to swim through the soil and dig their tunnels. So they're actually kind of interesting looking little critters.
Oh yeah. Now do they dig the tunnels and stuff, but do they have like dens anywhere that they, you know, live in, or do you know anything like on that? Do they still continue to live underground most of the time?
Yeah, they do. So they'll continue to live under the ground. That is where they live out most of their life. So they'll have their little den underground, and they make their different tunnels are also referred to sometimes as travel lanes, because that's how they travel to find sources of food. And that's why there'll be the tunnels that they use all the time, are kind of going back and forth to where their den is. And then they'll also have the ones that are abandoned because they went looking for food, didn't find anything they like, and then came back and didn't use that one anymore.
Gotcha. Now, most of the time in my experience, associate moles, not always, but typically with sandy soil because it's easier for them to move. But I imagine that they could be found in a variety of soil types.
Yeah, they do like those sandy soils, like you mentioned, that are easier to move around. But yeah, they can be found in a variety of soil types. I know my yard isn't that sandy, and I noticed some mole tunnels in the back of my yard a week or so ago.
Yep. It's that time of year. So, yeah, that's a good reminder there. So, anything else you'd like to share regarding our friend the mole?
Yeah. So, occasionally you'll also see kind of also what they're known for is their mole hills next to their tunnels. Okay. Where they kind of kick the extra dirt out, and that can be a sign of them as well, but those mole hills won't always be there, so that's a good sign. But also don't look for just that, because they're not always visible, or oftentimes their little mole hills are smaller than what people picture, so it will start off as just this little hill of dirt, not a bigger one that's always, you know, easy to see from maybe the window in your house as you're looking out in your yard.
Gotcha. So now, I mean, I'm sure that they probably do go above ground at some point, but mostly, you know, they're gonna stay underground.
Yeah, they will go above ground at some point, but they do mostly stay underground, so you'll hardly ever actually see them. It's more common to see signs of them.
Gotcha. No, that all makes sense. Well, David, if folks have questions on moles, maybe they've got a problem they need some help with control and some advice, what is the best way to get a hold of you?
The best way to get a hold of me is by calling our Independence office. That number is 620-331-2690.
Okay. Well, David, appreciate you coming on here for both segments this morning. Always good to have you in, and I hope you have a great rest of your week here.
Thanks for having me.
All right. David Rowling here from K-State Research and Extension's Wildcat District. Brought to you by the folks at Green Acres here this morning. We do have an early bird edition of Open Line coming up, and then we'll be talking with Candy Westbrook right around 9:10 here on KGGF.